I'm Australian, but from an Irish Catholic convict background. They've, at various stages over the past 100 to 150 years, around that time bracket, various Irish people were transported off to Australia as convicts or political prisoners, and they've resulted in me as a background, as my heritage. Now, this has meant that I've had the requisite number of nuns and priests tucked away in my family, and it's always curious to me when I come across a piece of religious hardware or something unusual from a religious background. And just to list some of the religious hardware which I've heard about and then be able to verify, religious Vatican computer system, an array of hammers, including papal hammers, and even battleships. I kid you not. And I want to assure you that they're surprising, but I'm not judgmental. I think if you're judgmental, it's sort of, it's if you want to put people down or people listen to your opinions. But in this case, very few people ask me about that or listen to my opinions, so I don't develop it much beyond curiosity, sort of fascination, and I suppose the parallel things. I'm sure that there's other areas of life in which there's symbolism which have taken on a whole new meaning. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. Appropriately, there's a police helicopter up in the sky, and you probably may be able to hear that as it combs. So it's got some sort of detection pod underneath it, so, and it's doing a big figure eight around here. So during this podcast, you may hear the sounds as it comes overhead. It's slowly working its way up and down the Blue Mountains, or this stretch of the Blue Mountains. See if someone's lost, or they're trying to track someone, or trying to do some sort of detection work. Good on them. And probably brings to me the very first introduction. I had a Jesuit education, and Jesuits are the troops, storm troops, the Counter-Reformation, the scientific body. So scientists, the Catholic scientists, are in the Jesuit organization, and so they'll often study theology and teach things to you. And I suppose one of the fascinating things I heard of, appropriate for this helicopter buzzing overhead, is the fact that you can have different grades of baptism. You can have one-on-one baptism as a sacrament. This is just written up on a chalkboard, so you're just bumbling away in a religious lesson. I had a Jesuit education. And there's a baptism of fire, which you can sort of understand. You know, you can't prejudge something. It sounds a baptism of fire, but this is where there's some sort of disaster, and you can baptize people, I think, during the disaster. I can't remember. And there's also something, I can't verify this. I can sort of verify other things. An aerial baptism, or a baptism where you're up in a plane and you can baptize on a whole region. Now, I don't know whether this is true. There's a lot of detailed things that we had religious lessons, and they discussed things with us. And so I can't verify this. But as you go back in history or study things, you pick these things up and I don't know, I find them fascinating and interesting. I suppose, going back for me, I had an auntie called Sister Mildred, or it's her old name. Her modernised name is Sister Margaret, her original name. She was a Dominican sister. She was seconded to Rome for special work, and we happened to be in Rome in 1990 and visited her. So there was a palazzo, I don't know how you pronounce it, these sort of ornate old houses on hills in Rome, in one of the seven hills of Rome, and we visited it, and she swung open, the door open, and there, to our amazement, was a whole computer system, a computer lab. It was the Vatican computer system. and they were processing annulments from marriage annulments from South America. There was became a need so large that they actually had to invest on in computers, and there were people in sort of smart religious cultural where to actual full religious garb. There was Monsignors, the big old computers. I sort of half remember, although it was 1990s, I do half remember it being an old VAX system, perhaps with reel-to-reel tapes, sort of a slightly out-of-date stuff with a computer printer going clacking at the moment. And of course, we were sort of swept away from there and went round Rome as Sister Margaret had all these spots that she used to go to, restaurants and certain bus trips she went on. And what fascinated me was that there was even office politics even in this computer system. And I think at least in South America, a divorce required a papal sign of approval, and if you just multiplied the size of South America by the number of Catholics by etc., so they had a computer system. So that fascinated me, and it wasn't until later. So that was direct experience. I had direct experience of people showing me their mobile attaché case with communions and wafers. This is for going into houses. And I still remember much earlier in South Australia, they would have home masses. And this was from, I suppose, the era of oppression. Still, so you'd go in, they'd still do it, but there wasn't any oppression or anything, but they'd open this attaché case and be a fold-out mass service of little wine in a little flask and a bottle and wafers and special ornate things. So that was fascinating, a bit of hardware. Also described from us, I forgot what the name of these trainee Jesuits were called. They described their... where they cast out devils, that type of stuff kit. They had apparently a special kit. Obviously don't know whether this is true, because I didn't see it. So just to sort of, there's this fascination, not making any particular judgment. I was studying the origins of science, and a lot of the origins of science came from trying to wrestle with the birth of the modern church. So you had scholasticism with St. Thomas Aquinas. Oh, look, and there's a whole lot of other religious backgrounds in early computing in Australia. I probably won't be able to go into that. So around the 8th century, there was a really wild and interesting time where there was still, from Constantine, 5 centres of the Catholic Church, of the Church: Constantinople, Jerusalem, Rome, Antioch, and there was another centre. So all the centres were equal in power, but Constantinople was the major residing power, and as their power began to fade, they couldn't protect the Roman Church. So the Roman Church began to separate a little bit around the 8th century. So it was interesting to read about sort of parallel. There were Roman, the emperor the Byzantine Empire. Then you had the Catholic or Rome, and Rome really created the Holy Roman Empire and created emperors there to create a separate zone. But what's fascinating is to actually pick up some of the hardware. So I've done the computer system, and some of the hardware is you went through a fair number, a mind-boggling number of popes in the 8th century, including antipopes. And antipopes are fantastic things. There's one librarian antipope. This is someone who claimed to be pope but wasn't a pope. I think that's the definition of an antipope, but he was a librarian antipope. And I sort of like the idea that so-and-so can be a villain, so-and-so can be, you know, have a hunchback. And this person was a librarian antipope. I've got to remember his name. I'm sorry if the sound of the helicopter is going overhead, but they may be doing an aerial baptism. But getting back to it, in the processes, there was various poisonings. There's various poisonings, and one poison didn't work, and so in order to kill off the Pope, they hit him in the head with a hammer. They hammered him to death. Now, this translated many years later, well, not too many years later, it's the papal hammer. There is such a thing as a jewel-encrusted papal hammer that the secretary of the Pope has, and when the Pope dies, now they hit the Pope in the head 3 times and ask him a question. This is sort of a pre-medical era method of checking that the Pope is dead, and then they get the and if the Pope's dead, I think the secretary then uses the papal hammer to crack the seal of the Pope on the Pope's hand. I think this is important because there's the famous Cadaver Synod. This is where, in order to become an emperor of the Roman Empire, they had to undo Formosa, Pope Formosa. You can look this up. 8th century Formosa actually means good-looking. He was a good-looking pope, and he was taken up and tried. So he was dug out of the his grave and sat up there, dressed up, and tried. I think as punishment, they cut off his fingers. And so to this day, when a modern pope dies, supposedly they get tapped on the head by the secretary 3 times to confirm death, but I think it's now done with doctors. And so this is of interest. And then there's a series of hammer. There's the hammer of witches, which is actually not directly to do with the Pope, but this is the sort of start of witch hunting, and this unsuccessful slightly mad person in Innsbruck, in I suppose that's in Austria, tried someone for witchcraft. It sort of backfired, and he went and wrote this classic book, The Hammer of Witches. It's got some sort of Italian name, but this is full on sorcery. And this was because there's a bit of a scepticism around this time. This is Hammer of Witches. So you've got the papal hammer, a jewel encrusted hammer, the Hammer of Witches, which is actually a conceptual hammer. Very interesting to see, but it's worthwhile studying the different grades of Inquisition. I think there's sort of 7 identifiable schools of Inquisition, the really radical Spanish ones, or the Spanish Inquisition, but there's a lot of more milder intellectual Inquisitions of people going along, and it's actually a fascinating thing to read about how there was various witch burnings. Obviously, is an aspect of the Inquisition, but there was also academic aspects to the Inquisition, and the people's foible of writing notes in the margins of books that often is used in the Inquisition, in a more gentler Inquisition. So this gives you the Hammer of Witches is worthwhile looking. And then there's the papal sledgehammer. And there's this tradition which has occurred where they brick up a wall, I think in one church, to represent a anniversary a Roman release of slaves, which included a lot of Christians. And so this year of forgiveness it's every 50 years or as the Pope decrees. And what happens is that there's this door which is knocked and opened, and somewhere along the line they began to brick up the door, and the Pope had to actually knock it down with a hammer, and fairly substantial hammer. And eventually Pope John in the 70s knocked the wall, and the wall fell on him a bit, so they have sort of modified it a bit. The workers remove the bricking up. So there's a wall in the Vatican, there's four churches in Rome, and now it's spread out to churches. I think there's a church in Canada, in Montreal, I'm not sure. I can't quite remember. But there's churches. But there is this papal... It used to be the papal sledgehammer to... come through it. So there's the that's going on. There's the aerial baptism. There's the papal computer, which did annulments. I physically saw. So this is not a well-known fact. There's the papal hammer. And so if you are to, I suppose, Google papal hammers, this is a fascinating thing to see. So I sort of rather like tools. But what piqued my interest was the time that the papal states were a political entity in themselves, and they had ports, so they required a navy to protect themselves from various pirates. I think Saracens were coming up. It's also interesting to sort of compare the pirates versus the Vikings and the conflicts involved in them. And so they had I really can't remember the first two ships. So this is in the papal navy with and so it's evolved, the papal navy, either Saint Peter and Saint John or some Saint Paul and Saint John. I'll have to remember each ship. So it wouldn't be the SS, it would be the Saint Paul. Saint Paul would come up to your ship and inspect it. So they had various ports, I think around Trieste and stuff like that. Oh, this is just going off deep memory. It's coming off the thing that, and look, this will be a test if you actually look this up and see if any of these numbers are correct. The actual name of the ship was called the Immaculate Conception, which is a large papal warship. Of course, they had plenty of money, so they went to the best warship production company in the world, country in the world, and that was the British. So the British produced I think it was 23-gun, but that sounds a bit odd, 23-gun warship, which sailed down the Thames and was the Immaculate Conception. So you'd be in a panic if you're a pirate raiding any of the papal ports, and you suddenly had this warship turn up. And it's sort of remarkable to actually work out how that all worked out. And of course, you've got the there's the hardware, religious hardware, and it's of interest. I don't think people are making a big fuss of it. I think if people were making a fuss of it, people would attack people for it. It just happens. It's just one of those things that happens. So that's the computer system, the array of hammers. There's various hammers. There's some other devices. There's a holy axe. I'll have to remember. It was Saint Mildred, and I've forgotten the name of the other English saint who went down with his holy axe to chop down pagan trees. And so I'll have to do it. So there's that ray of hardware, and all the way up to the papal battleships of the Holy Roman Empire. Now there's the Now the Vatican's reduced, or is a state, a very wealthy state, is that. And so there's a region of Rome, which is, I suppose, the Italian police can come on and all that type of stuff. So it's part of the Italian state, but it's really a separate country. This is Vatican City. And that has some, in terms of country, it's very small. In terms of actual citizens, there's 600 or 600, 700 citizens, including the Pope. So the Pope is not necessarily Italian. It's the Pope Italian used to be. I remember in the 70s, is the Pope Italian? And the answer is obviously not after a certain while. But so you've got various people who are members there. Now, I think, and I may be wrong on this, that the actual Swiss Guard, who are mercenaries, are members of the Vatican State, which makes things rather complicated, because they're not, they're citizens. So they're mercenaries and they're also citizens of the Vatican State, making up that 600, 100 people. It's a very interesting aspect of it. So let's talk about it in terms of, there's a certain concept that this is a bit, it could be disrespectful, but it's on the other side, not knowing about this type of stuff or not being aware of these artifacts means that they are real. There is actual a papal hammer. There was a computer system. There was definitely a warship, a papal warship. So they're physical things. So I think being respectful and not talking about them is not a helpful extreme. It's a very worthwhile thing to actually contemplate. Makes it a richer thing, and you can, as you sort of go into, say, like the Cadaver Synod and the various ways that Rome was playing off the Lombardi versus Charlemagne's grandfather Pippin, the various states there, and how they were manoeuvring different documents towards them, that power play in northern Italy sort of led to Italy generating a separation of the Roman Catholic Church from the other five centres of power, indeed five centres of power. And I don't think people fully, they don't understand. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with people, but they don't understand the way that Constantine said this is a thought of a national religion, that Christianity was going to be a national religion, and organized conferences, and it was really set up by the state. And so at the fall of the Roman Empire, it actually had to go through several iterations before we got the final situation, and the various conferences and various artifacts are part of the overall story of understanding what's going on. That's all I have to say for the moment. Not my best podcast, but perhaps if you're interested in religious things, you'll find that interesting. Bye for now. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, keep on thinking critically, keeping your mind open.